SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The only place in football where the offense is always on the field is on Moneyline. With the two best hosts in radio, Donnie Wrightside.
If anybody wasn't watching this, I don't know what you were doing.
And Kevin Walsh.
Forget, act like you've been there before.
On the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius XM Channel 159.
It's a Football Friday, baby! It's your boy Donnie Wrightside here on a solo mission, the best hour of your day. Now officially underway, Sirius XM Channel 159. If you're watching also on Sports Grid On Demand on YouTube, the best way to reach out to your host, which again would be me, the best way to actually interact with your host, which would be me, you can do that as well. I'm excited for today. I love Football Fridays. I love when we have an action-packed game on Thursday night that I didn't get my head bashed in when I was handicapping it here. A little bit of a mixed bag last night. A lot of fun to watch. A couple parlays hit, a couple sides hit, a couple fun props hit. A good night all the way around. And that good night was really good for the Detroit Lions, who now sit at 12-1 on the season, 6-1 at home. The Green Bay Packers, who entered that game 9-3, have now dropped to 9-4. So it looks like the division is wrapped up here for the Lions from a Packers perspective. They're still going to have to fight, talking about Detroit, with the Minnesota Vikings. That'll come later. But there's no person on this network that has backed the Detroit Lions more than me, identifying them early on as the team I wanted to take with my handicapping expertise for some futures in conference play. And now the Detroit Lions, as you wake up this morning, the NFC conference winner, based on the FanDuel Sportsbook, listed at a plus 130 price. We saw last week as high as minus 700 to win the division for the Detroit Lions. Back down a little bit yesterday in that minus 500 range. That now shows at FanDuel minus 1100 to win the division for the Detroit Lions in the NFC North. What did we see yesterday? Really interesting, sloppy start. 7-0 in the first quarter for the Detroit Lions. Not a lot of passing for Jordan Love at the break. I think he might have had like three or maybe seven pass completions at the break, or seven attempts at the break, I want to say, which was crazy. He only threw 20 times. Jared Goff did go 32 of 41 yesterday for 283, three touchdowns, and one interception, which was bad. But this was a back-and-forth game starting in the second quarter, an ultra-exciting second half, which saw 21 total points go up on the board in the third quarter, which meant three touchdowns, and then 20 total points in the fourth quarter, which meant two touchdown drives and two field goal drives for each team. And that final field goal drive was enough to put the Lions ahead in that game for good at 34-31. What did I see out of this game? I love the Lions. I love the aggressiveness. But also at times when we were talking on the desk yesterday, there is a default mechanism which I worry about on the Detroit Lions. And that's head coach Dan Campbell. And trust me when I tell you this. I love aggression. Aggression means a lot. Aggression to your football team when your head coach goes, no, it's fourth down, we're going for it. That instills a lot of confidence. That coach understands that we have the goods to get after it and we can do some damage here. And that happened all night last night. Two fourth down plays in the red zone, which ended up in touchdowns, which were a catalyst for the Detroit Lions winning that game. I have no issues with them. And understand this, as I said, as a handicapper, team total guy, touchdown guy, prop guy, I love when the offense goes for it as opposed to kicking a field goal. Fourth and two, fourth and one in the red zone. Go for it. I love it here. But there are times where you take a look at Dan Campbell and say, I don't know if this is the right move here. Now, how about the aggression, which they handed off to Jahmyr Gibbs on a fourth and one on basically their own 30-yard line and got stuffed? Those are the ones that are a little bit tough. But again, I understand the aggression and what got you there. But also, late in that football game, Kevin and I, along with Joe Lisi, sitting at the desk on Pro Football Today, the issue that I had with that final play was you didn't need it. And sometimes I look back at old school football, pre-analytics. Some of my favorite coaches in the world, Bill Parcells, right? Let's just take a look at him. He was always under the guise of, we'll play good defense, but we're going to put our team in the best possible position to win without risking a loss by doing something stupid. So, case in point, minute 45 on the clock, you're up 4 points, you're at midfield. You're not running rollouts to throw with Phil Sims or, you know, Jeff Hostetler. You're going to hand the football three times. They're going to call all of their timeouts. You're going to punt them inside the 10-yard line. They're going to say, go 90 yards to beat us here. And if you do, congratulations. But putting your team in the best possible spot to win that game. Now, late, again, the MO of the Detroit Lions is to always be aggressive. You're under a minute to go. There's no timeouts left for the Packers. It's a short fourth down, which they handed off to David Montgomery, and they got, which wasted more time, which allowed Detroit to kick the field goal, and it worked, which is a very important thing. But you didn't need that. You were already in a dome. It was going to be a short field goal. Kick the field goal. You would have left the Green Bay Packers with, I don't know, let's just say a maximum 35, 36 seconds by the time they got the football on their own 30-yard line. I take those percentages because the one thing I do know, you get stopped on that fourth down, you don't win the game, and you end up going to overtime, which wasn't needed there. I understand the aggression, but this also comes from previously looking at Dan Campbell in the playoffs with his ultra aggression. I'm not going to take field goals, and it ended up getting them beat last year. You might have had a team that went to the Super Bowl if it wasn't for your head coach in key moments. And some people might say, Donnie, you can't have it both ways. You can't be aggressive and then not be aggressive in other times. Yes, you can. I love the aggression during the game, and I'll repeatedly say that. Fourth down and goal from the 1 or 2 yard line, absolutely. You have an unbelievable offensive coordinator that you trust to make the right play decisions. You have a super accurate quarterback, one of the best, if not the best, offensive lines in football when healthy. Electric running backs and wide receivers and capable tight ends. Use that to your advantage. I love it. But sometimes I feel the over-aggression for Dan Campbell is eventually going to get caught up. And you will see that in the playoffs because they will be aggressive again. But it's smart aggression. It just is. The fourth down to go for it late in the game, completely disagreed. And also this is coming from a guy that goes, you know what? You got Jahmyr Gibbs in the backfield on that previous fourth and one, which they stopped here. I actually didn't mind it. I didn't. Now, it almost technically cost them the game, but I am okay with the super aggression. But in moments where you don't need to have the super aggression, just take the points and win the game. Now, I would have loved to see it play out. Let's just say Detroit kicked that field goal, and then Green Bay goes down with no timeouts and drives 50 yards into field goal range. I doubt that would have happened. The percentages would have been in your favor still for the Detroit Lions to win that game in regulation by the 3 points. I understand the aggressiveness. And again, this comes from, look, I'm an Eagles fan at heart. I was watching that game last night, and I did win a parlay. Bet365 had that $25 no risk. I took Jahmyr Gibbs to score a touchdown and just took smartly the money line of Detroit to win and not the 3.5 points, which did cash in. But also, you have to separate your fandom from what you think makes sense financially. You guys know I'm invested in the Detroit Lions. I think it's 13 total tickets I have on them to win the NFC, which getting home field advantage goes a long, long way. So I'm saying last night to myself, okay, would love the Packers to win because that'll open up, you know, an extra avenue for the Philadelphia Eagles in that number one seed. But at the same time, I still do think, even with the injuries on defense, the Lions are the best team in the NFC if they have home field advantage, which they do have right now. Now, the schedules between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Detroit Lions are markedly different heading down the stretch. The Philadelphia Eagles do have one really tough game, but it's at home against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And essentially four other games, which the Commanders will fight you on the road. We're not taking that away. But the other three games, they should be landslide by victories. Giants, Cowboys at home, and the Carolina Panthers. It's not the same thing for the Detroit Lions, but also circumstances as well could determine who needs these games and also, more importantly, who's going to be playing in these games. The reason I bring that up is the Buffalo Bills are going to travel to take on Detroit after Detroit's little mini bye. Hell of a game. Cannot wait to watch that play out next Sunday at 4:25. Then they take on the Bears outdoors, which is a dome team going outdoors in the cold weather. That might be tough. But the Niners game is supposed to be really hard. Is anybody going to be left on the 49ers by the time they play on December 30th? How about the Vikings 1-5? Will they already have everything clinked at that point? Don't need to pay anybody, play anybody? We'll find out. But guys, it's a Football Friday. I'm excited, and it's my job to get you ready for college football and professional football this weekend. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Root
Turn. Shout out to my dogs in the chat box out here. Getting after it right here on Moneyline on a Friday, right here on SiriusXM channel 159. And also, you can join the chat box if you want to. Sports Grid on demand. Hit the subscribe button. Get involved. Have some fun. Get after it. By the way, Chris Warren says, I was okay with the late fourth down, but the other fourth down, which they did not get and gave up the touchdown, is where we have to question Campbell's decision-making. And also, Chris Warren says, I love his aggressiveness at times, but let's hope it doesn't cost my Lions NFC winner, division winner, Super Bowl matchup with the Chiefs. And I agree. Because I like to preface this again by saying, there's nothing better when you have prop bets, which most of my prop bets don't ever come from a field goal. Hey, longest field goal to kicker to have 7 points in the game, which they're fun bets to make at this time. But I tend to stay away from those. So I love aggression because it means more chances for yards for my quarterback, for my wide receiver, tight end, and running backs, and also chances to score more touchdowns for the anytime touchdown market. Yesterday, I actually thought I was dead in the water. I took over 3.5 touchdown passes at plus 105 in that game. I go, you know what? Not so much of a handicap here, but I think there's going to be juice and a lot of points in this game and a lot of chances to throw touchdown passes. First couple scores of the game were running. I'm like, oh, I'm dead here. I didn't get my first touchdown pass until a minute to go in the first half, which again, Detroit scored on fourth down, which if they have settled for a field goal, I don't win my bet. Because you know why? Jared Goff ended up with 3 touchdown passes, Jordan Love with 1. That equals 4. I don't get those unless they go for it on fourth down. So that's why I love the aggression, and I love putting 7s on the board instead of 3s, because it pays better for the way I like to handicap. Now, let's take a look at the college football card tonight, guys, by the way. And shout out to the people once again in the chat box. I love to see it. I have it up on one of my monitors each and every time. I see every single word you guys write in that chat box. So love the support. Love the support on SiriusXM Radio and also all the apps. By the way, have you guys downloaded the Sports Grid app yet? It is fantastic. You want videos, it's there. You want to watch live, it's there. You want handicapping information. You want to follow your favorite sports heroes here on the Sports Grid Network. Download that app, man. It's absolutely phenomenal wherever apps are available. Now, let's take a look at tonight's card. 3 football games on deck. I'm not a big guy tonight where I'm like, you know what? I handicapped Tulane Army. I didn't do that. 5.5 point favorite for Tulane. Army, 45.5. Anybody in the chat box, anybody out there listening, you know, hit me up on Twitter, at RightsideVP. Got any action tonight? Because I would love to hear about it. But I don't care about Tulane Army, to be honest. I don't care about Western Kentucky and Jacksonville State. But it is interesting here. UNLV and Boise State. Up at Albertsons Stadium on the blue turf. The battle for the Mountain West. Opened up at 4.5 as a favorite towards Boise State. Still sits at 4.5 today, guys. 59.5 is a total at FanDuel. Now we're seeing 57.5s across the board. I always like to look at these because Ashton Jeanty is such a good running back. But the price points are absolutely insanity on what they charge books for his touchdown props and his rushing props. So this one actually doesn't even look as bad as what a lot of the games early in the season had. Ashton Jeanty at FanDuel tonight is minus 800 to score an anytime touchdown tonight. Followed by Ricky White for UNLV. Malik Williams, minus 130 for UNLV. Thomas for UNLV, 105. And Louder, plus 160 for Boise. But this line looks a little bit cheap to me. It does. Tells me that UNLV is really going to be in this football game tonight. 57.5, so we're expecting points. Passing props-wise, Maddox Madsen tonight, 216.5 for Boise. And Haji Malik Williams, 183 for UNLV. But you know where we want to get to. It's not the receiving props, which, quite frankly, really low. Actually, I said Ricky White's 83.5, so that's a decent number. But I always like to get to the rushing props because I don't know if I've ever seen this. And I don't watch Boise on a week-to-week basis. I basically follow, hey, they win. How much did Jeanty run for at this point? Can he be a Heisman? Which he's probably not going to be. Travis Hunter is going to win that for Colorado, and rightfully so. He's been tremendous. But that's no knock on Ashton Jeanty. Running backs always get downgraded for what they do. And also, if Ashton Jeanty did play in a Power 5 conference and was doing this, he probably would get elevated a little bit. We're not taking anything away from him. But I do like to see his rushing props because you equate it to the NFL, right? It's like, hey, Saquon might be the best back in the league. 88.5, 89.5, 91.5. Derrick Henry, what's his prop? Same thing. 80.5, 85.5, 90.5. Like, ooh, that's going to be tough to get, but it's a running back that you think could possibly go over the century mark. Like, Ashton Jeanty tonight is 170.5, which I got a kick out of. which that sometimes is light here, which you expect him to run for close to 200 yards in every single game. So as we watch and see, is this one of those moments? Because Colorado is just going to have a bowl game. They're not going to play in the Big 12 championship game, which means Travis Hunter is done. Does anybody out there actually believe, because this is a primetime game, 8 o'clock, it's not a standalone, but Tulane Army is going to go up against it. But a lot of eyes will be focused here. And I like the fact that it is a West Coast game, but they didn't say, hey, you know what, for TV, Tulane Army is going to play at 8 p.m. Eastern, and then UNLV Boise State is going to play at 11 o'clock, so we can have those two windows up here. I like the fact that they're putting on early. Does anybody believe, because we look at the sports books and what the odds are, and it's basically a lock that Travis Hunter is going to win the Heisman Trophy this season. I don't have any arguments for that. Great football player, and there are a lot of really good football players across the country. But can Ashton Jeanty do anything tonight in your guys' eyes where he can possibly cut into that lead? And of course you say yes, Donnie. He can rush for 275 yards and 5 touchdowns. But again, if he does that, wouldn't that be able to vault him up even closer? And it's unfair to ask a running back to say, hey, your average tonight should be at least 170 yards on the ground. Think about that. Just think about the season he's had. And if he lines up in their championship game tonight, and runs for, let's just say, 180 and 3 scores. Standing ovation, clap. Like, he's obviously going to go to the Downtown Athletic Club in New York City and be an invitee and probably finish second overall. But I just want to see what he can actually do tonight in that primetime game that might be able to sway some voters. Because keep in mind, I always say this. The sports books do not bet on the award. They don't have the outcome of the award. They're just taking a look at the bets where they're coming in and the information that's there that tells them who the Heisman Trophy winner is probably going to be. But it's not just how much odds you have in your favor, you win it. We've seen upsets before. Of this magnitude, probably not. But Ashton Jeanty tonight, going to get after it. Let's take a look at that Saturday NCAA football card. But more importantly, we're going to hit some NFL. We're going to set the table for a big weekend. It's your boy DRS on the radio, Sirius XM Channel 159, right here on the Sports Grid Network.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
By the way, the group of five teams, right? Boise State. Like, don't we need them in, to be honest? If we're going to put a group of five in, like UNLV gets in, I guess. If Boise State loses, is that the automatic? I'm not even following. Like, it's just been Boise State the entire way through. So even if somebody in the chat box comes up with it, like, what happens if Boise State loses tonight? Is it UNLV that goes? Or could possibly Tulane or Army go at that point? So if anybody out there has any shakes on that, just let me know in the chat box just to keep that updated. But it's feeling like it's supposed to be Boise, and I actually would like Boise in. It's just a shame that Boise is going to get in and then have their bye. And then played a neutral site bowl game instead of at Albertson Stadium up there in Boise. That would have been a little bit more fun to watch, but it is what it is. As we move over to Saturday college football, two games at noon, Iowa State, Arizona State. Line currently sitting at -1.5 for Arizona State. And let me just take a look at the neutral site where this one is going to be played in. AT&T Stadium down at Jerry World. How about that? So should have a fast track for that one. I don't really care about Iowa State or Arizona State, to be honest. Another game at noon, Ohio, Miami, Ohio. Back in the day, I'd be betting this because it's the MAC. I love the MAC. But how about this? MACtion at only 43.5 is a total and a line at 1.5. So theoretically, those two games at noon should be very competitive. Two teams basically coin flips here on neutral sites. Use that Miami, Ohio game. Or excuse me, the MAC championship game is in Detroit. Let me just double check that we're still there. It's not popping up, but I assume it's still in Detroit. That's typically where they have that. 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Now we get down to the business, guys. 113, 114 on the rotation, 4 o'clock kick, SEC championship. That's Georgia and it's Texas. And it is a neutral site. And no, this one is not at Jerry World where Texas was like, hey, we're in the Lone Star State. You go right in the heart of SEC territory. Athens, Georgia, a decent little drive to Atlanta, but come on now. Atlanta is SEC territory. That's Georgia territory. It's a de facto home game. But I do love the fact, though, that Texas opened up as a 1.5-point favorite. FanDuel now sits them at 2.5, but other outlets are already up to 3, which I think is really interesting. But at the same time, to be honest, That's a stone cold Texas line, isn't it? And we had Mark Zinno on yesterday on the early line, talked with Ben and I, saying, you know what, like, and I asked him the question, like, what is the difference now? Like, Georgia went in and tail kicked Texas in their own building. Now we're saying Texas is a 3-point favorite, give or take, going up against Georgia in SEC territory where Georgia is used to playing in Atlanta. And the answer was basically, Texas is a better version of itself now than Georgia is when they played last, understandably. Now, also keep in mind, the committee has told you, this game doesn't matter to the loser. They're still going to get into the college football playoff. Texas loses, they're in. Georgia loses, they're in. So really, the victor goes the spoils, the higher seed, getting a bye, and also being SEC champions does mean something. Steve Sarkisian, you kidding me? Coming over to the SEC where everybody told me, oh, be careful what you wish for, and he goes in and wins the SEC in year number one? That would be absolutely sensational for that program. So I want to see how that plays out, but we don't have the juice that we should have had on that game. Like, about the last decade, right, the SEC championship game. Usually the winner, obviously, moving on to the college football playoff because it's the SEC, and sometimes the loser goes home. Like last year with Georgia, who might have won the national championship if they didn't run into Alabama in the SEC championship game. Now, this SEC championship game still holds weight. It's a fun game, two really good programs, blue bloods. But at the same time, the loser regroups and goes, okay, on to the college football playoff. Marshall, Louisiana, could care less. SMU and Clemson is an interesting one here. As SMU opened up as a 1.5-point favorite, now it's 2.5s across the board. We know Clemson backed into the ACC championship game. Why? Because the Miami Hurricanes lost on the road after having a 21-point lead against the Syracuse Orange. SMU is a fine football team, but they don't move the needle for me all that much. The ACC hasn't moved the needle all year. And this coming from a Miami Hurricanes fan where that defense would not hold up against anybody in the college football playoff. Would it be fun to bet on? Yes. Because you get a ton of points. Cam Ward's exciting. Xavier Restrepo, Jacoby George. I mean, they have a lot of great players, Miami. But the defense really didn't hold up their end of the bargain. If you give your defense a 21-point lead in a must-game situation, guys, I don't care if the offense scores for the rest of the game. That should be enough, and clearly it wasn't. So a little bit of juice in that game. The winner obviously moves on the question, though. The loser, if it's Clemson, they're out completely. They're not making it in. SMU is the other interesting one. If Clemson wins, gets the automatic bid, where does SMU go at that point? Because theoretically, I understand what the committee is saying. Like, hey, we're not really going to downgrade you too much if you make your conference championship game. But a loss is still a loss at that point. And I don't think SMU should deserve to be in if they lose. Now, lose by 1 point on a 50-yard field goal at the gun. Those are differing circumstances. But if Clemson beats them 31-24, I don't think SMU gets in. I really don't. We'll talk a little Penn State, Oregon after the break. Then we flip it over to Sunday's NFL action. We're going to get after it. It's Donnie Wrightside. It's a Football Friday. It's a Sports Grid Network. And I will be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Show me what you're working with, baby. What I mean by that is tickets tonight. Anybody got any action? At RightsideVP on Twitter. Hit me up. Let me know what you're cheering on tonight. Wins, losses, doesn't matter. Nobody ever unit chains over here. You bet a dollar, you bet $5, you bet 500. Doesn't matter to me. Let me see what you got. Anything on Tulane Army? UNLV Boise? Action out here in the chat box, Jared Hollinger. Bryson Daly's only minus 225 ATD tonight. Anytime touchdowns, what that means. Dude's a terror and a stud. He's scoring tonight. See, that's what I like. I like watching stuff like that. You want to throw it in an SGP as an add-on, even in another sport? Fantastic stuff. It's great stuff to cheer on here, as Army is a 5-point dog to Tulane tonight. We'll see how that game plays out. But I did want to touch on Penn State, Oregon, 8 p.m. Saturday night, which, again, typically would be one of those games. Win and move on. Loser goes home for all intents and purposes. Oregon opened up as a 4.5-point favorite. That's 3.5 now across the board. A total 51.5. That now sits at 50.5 and even 49.5 showing at BetMGM here in New Jersey. Here's the question I have. Are we changing, or should I say moving the goalpost for James Franklin in this game? Because it's not a true do-or-die game per se. Like in the regular season, like you're supposed to have to win every single game typically until you get to this year. But every time the Penn State Nittany Lions have a step-up game, what I mean by that is they're not the victors based on the line itself. Hey, Penn State's minus 17.5. Yeah, James Franklin will put your lights out. Hey, Penn State's favored by 5.5. All right, Penn State's going to do well in that game. Hey, Penn State's getting 5.5. They never do well in those games. Top 10 opponents, meaningful games. That's not Penn State and James Franklin's territory. However, and I also don't want to get caught up in this, and I've said it already multiple times. Georgia and Texas are not rolling into the SEC championship game and saying, this game doesn't mean anything. We're both moving on. No. You win the SEC and put that ring on your finger for the SEC champion, that means something. The coaching staff, that means something. Recruiting prowess, that really means something. So nobody's rolling into their championship game knowing they're already going to the college football playoff and it doesn't matter. It's the same thing with Penn State, Oregon. You don't think Oregon, coming from the Pac-12, shows up in the Big Ten as like, no big deal. Great regular season. It's okay if we don't win the championship game because we're still going to go to the college football playoff. No. They want to win it. And the same thing with Penn State. You don't think James Franklin wants to win this game and tell everybody to shut the heck up about my career and I can't win big games. This is a big one. Now, yes, will there be an asterisk on it? Because it's not a win or go home type of game for either one of these teams. But how do you guys play this? Like, how do you guys play this? Shout out the X-Men in the chat box as well. How do we play this here? Because I'm still under the guise that this technically is still a big game. Penn State is the underdog, and they typically don't do well in this environment. But how are you playing this game out here, guys? Are you taking that same approach with Penn State, Oregon? Is it a game you don't care about? Or is it a game you have a decided interest in saying, no, Donnie? Look at all of that money coming in on Oregon. Just looking at one of my apps here. Through 27,000 tickets, 13% of those spread tickets are coming in on Penn State. And that line opened up at 4.5, now down to 3.5. Or are you one of the guys like me, James Franklin, in a big game situation? We're just not believing it here. Because I'm going to stick with that. Until he starts to prove me wrong that he can win a game that he's not supposed to win, that's where I'm keeping it this level. So if you guys got any tickets on that, shoot them over to me. In the chat box, got ideas. X-Man saying, hey, Oregon minus 6.5. He's alting that bad boy up. Chris Warren, Penn State loses. See that? I agree. Show me something tomorrow, Penn State. I don't know if I'm going to bet on that game or not, though. I might, though. It's a good Saturday slate. And also, it's not endless football. Like, hey, it kicks off at 12, goes all the way till midnight with a million games that don't matter. Like, games really matter tomorrow. And it should be a fun day to watch it play out. But that's how I feel about NCAA action. And again, if you got any action, shoot it over to me. Love to cheer it on, at least see what you guys have at this point. Let's talk about some NFL action this weekend. We're still in the bye weeks, which does stink. Look, bye weeks are needed in the NFL. Don't get me wrong. But I just hate, like, I like the full slates out there. I like when all the big boys are playing, which primarily a lot of them are, but it does leave a lot to be desired. Let's look at the entirety of the card and say, where is that game that we can't miss, that we have to watch, and we have to cheer on? Atlanta, Minnesota, it's actually not a bad football game. Minnesota saw again that Green Bay lost, which helps them, but also at the same time, Detroit won, which doesn't help Minnesota. Minnesota's like that forgotten child, right? Hey, family has three kids. Baby gets all the attention. The older one's probably up to no good. And the middle one is like, hey, look, where am I at here? Nobody pays attention to me. That's what I feel like the Minnesota Vikings are right now. We love Detroit. We love the Philadelphia Eagles. And then you say, well, hey, Minnesota's right there up there with them with the record. They're going to need to beat the Atlanta Falcons. We'll get to that game in a bit, but I'm just going over the games themselves. New Orleans and New York. Drew Lock's getting a start. MetLife's going to be empty. Dome team going outdoors. Not a ton of excitement there, but by the way, Alvin Kamara, what's he going for, guys, in that game? $125? Like, no Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill's not going to be stealing rushing yards. Taysom Hill's not going to be stealing the carries inside the five-yard line. Wonder what Alvin Kamara props are. We'll take a look at those in a little bit. Jacksonville and Tennessee? Come on now. So we have one average game in Atlanta, Minnesota, which, you know, should get your attention. New Orleans Giants stinks. Jacksonville, Tennessee stinks. Raiders, Tampa Bay. I do think there's a chance for scoring, but again, it's a bad Raiders team, and Tampa Bay just trying to hold on and fight against the Atlanta Falcons. A lot of juice in that game? Not really. I'll tell you which game could get really intriguing. It's Cleveland and Pittsburgh. Jameis Winston, Russell Wilson. What'd they throw for like 7,000 yards combined last week between the two? At the Steelers at Acrisure Stadium. No precipitation, which we like. Temperature's going to be okay, 43, 44, 45 degrees. And windy conditions, not necessarily, right around 10 miles per hour. So you should get a clean slate. This line opened up at 40 and a half. People say, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, 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 it can't be. Like, I understand Pittsburgh's MO, and they're getting healthier on defense, right? We understand that. Highsmith will come back this week. T.J. Watt, boy, they collapsed the pocket as good as anybody in the NFL. But are they baiting us here? Because they did open up at 40 and a half, and it did go to 43 and a half at most places. Westgate, Las Vegas at 44 now. But answer me this. Jameis Winston games, they're not designed to stay under 45 points. Do you think all of a sudden Kevin Stefanski and Kenny Dorsey are going to be out there like, you know what, let's run the football all game long against the Steelers, see what happens. And you understand when you engage the Pittsburgh Steelers in a game that might be a shootout, they can hang around with that. And you saw that last week against Cincinnati. Are we getting baiting and switched here at that 43 and a half? Like, which one? Like, if you forget about, you have to put a wager down on this game. We have to risk your money, win or lose. No risk in this game. Don't we all just take the 43 and a half to the over there? Isn't that the case? Looking for the fireworks. So that game actually, even though Cleveland is going nowhere this year, and Pittsburgh is fighting for the AFC Division Championship, that game does have a little bit of juice at 1 o'clock. Next game, Carolina-Philadelphia. As my guy, Joe Lisi, would say, that's a smash job. That's a smasher right there. And also, here's, by the way, here's what I'm fighting in this Carolina-Philadelphia game, guys. Just get an idea. Here's what I'm fighting. Is this it? Because Devonta Smith is probably going to come back in this game. A.J. Brown on the other side. That's a bad defense in Carolina. Is this the day that you finally get to air it out if you're Jalen Hurts? Or, and again, this has nothing to do with X and O's, is this where you see that Saquon Barkley is a legitimate MVP contender that has a chance to break Eric Dickerson's all-time single-season rushing record? Does he go off? Do they give him the touches on the goal line? That's what I'm debating here at this point. I think the Eagles roll, but how do they roll? On the ground or in the air? Oh, boys, the Football Friday. You know I love this stuff. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back after these words. More football is on the way.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Checking in. I always like to get nostalgic as well. Like some things that come across my screen. I'm a big stadium guy. Like I love this. You just pictures of stadiums. I love if I've never been there before, what it would look like if I went there. Like just, and also as your kid, walking into your, you know, home ballpark, football field, like, wow, first time you see it, saw it so many times on television. For me, it was Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia, the first time I saw that bright green AstroTurf. Thought I was in, like, Wonderland, not realizing how bad a stadium it actually was. When I got older, the first time I took a trip to watch the Miami Hurricanes play in the Orange Bowl, I just sat there for a while and said, oh, my goodness. It's so cool I'm finally here after all those years of watching major event after major event. And sometimes I just sit in the seats and go, think back to a game 15, 20, 30 years ago of what happened there and how it must have sounded like. I love to do that. Now, there's a picture right now out here, which is why I love the college football playoff and how fun that first round is going to be. It's Notre Dame Stadium at night and it's snowing. Just a picture from the parking lot and says, ooh, what could be in a playoff game coming up in a few weeks here in colder weather, which is awesome. But you know what I get upset with? I look at Notre Dame Stadium now and I don't see the nostalgia anymore. You say, Donnie, you're crazy. Like Notre Dame, iconic stadium. It is. But I grew up in the 80s and the early 1990s, going through my early teen years into high school in the mid-90s. Go back and watch those football games where Notre Dame took on Miami. Lou Holtz is the head coach, Jimmy Johnson. Go back and look at those games between the Florida State Seminoles going in to take on Notre Dame. There were no replay boards there. There was no, like, you know, boxes on either side, just one small side on the one, like, you know, the press goes in there, the coaches and stuff like that, very small. Those are the stadiums that I missed. And I've never been to Notre Dame Stadium, but I don't know if I ever would want to go now. It's the same thought process I have also on Wrigley Field. I've never been to Wrigley Field, but I grew up again in the 80s and the 90s, where for a lot of time in the 1980s, Wrigley didn't even have lights there. There were no scoreboards that showed the replays, like that old school nostalgic feel, which is completely gone. Again, that's just me. Sometimes I get nostalgic and say, well, I would love to watch the Notre Dame game in the 80s or the early 90s just for that atmosphere and being so close to the football field. It's crazy the way it looks. Same thing with the Green Bay Packers. Like, hey, man, Lambeau's an institution, and it still might be. But Lambeau's not Lambeau anymore. It's like, it looks like a giant mall at this point right now. It's not originally what it was or even through the early parts of the 1990s. But again, evolutions do change. I understand money streams have to change, but I just lose that of I have to watch a football game at this place, but it's not really that place anymore. So there, little side piece, nostalgia. It is what it is. Let's get back to that NFL football card on Sunday. Told you that Carolina-Philadelphia game. Like, which way do we go, though? Saquon Barkley should have an unbelievable game. But do you remember when we were talking about last year with Christian McCaffrey, the San Francisco 49ers? Ways that you bet the Niners. And Kevin and I used to have so much fun with this. And I was a staunch believer. And I was right just about the entire season, right up to where Christian McCaffrey's touchdown streak broke, where they tried to put him back in the football game and force him into the end zone. Like, teams understand what is at stake. Players understand what's at stake. History could be in the making for the Philadelphia Eagles. The one thing you love about Saquon Barkley is everything he said for coming over to the Philadelphia Eagles was what? Just about the team. You even saw that highlight. I think it was against the New York Giants. Yes, it was against the Giants, where they had Nick Sirianni mic'd up, and he went over to talk to Saquon Barkley. He's like, hey, you know what? Your personal record, franchise record, whatever the record was, it's in reach. I would love to see you go out there and rush for another 10 yards and get that. That'd be great. But it's up to you. And Saquon goes, you know what? You know, let the other guy spin, man. I had my fill tonight. We're going to win this football game. It's all good. But when do you start to step out into the pantheon of, you can do something that nobody's ever done before in your professional sport, which run for a certain amount of yards to pass up Eric Dickerson? How about a running back winning MVP and what that would mean to the offensive line, to the team, and the player itself? That's what I'm questioning this weekend, because I'm not questioning the Eagles winning the game. They're favored by 2 touchdowns. But when I want to play prop bets in this game, I do think Jalen Hurts has a chance to throw for 250-plus and multiple touchdown passes, which is something he doesn't need to do with Saquon Barkley. Or is this, we're inside the 10-yard line, maybe I'd roll Jalen Hurts out of the pocket and throw a touchdown pass to a wide-open tight end or A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith, or do I just keep plugging that rock here to Saquon Barkley so at the end of that game, he's got 125-plus yards and multiple touchdowns to ascend up that MVP leaderboard? That's the tough part about it here. That's the tough part. Jets and the Miami Dolphins. I got to tell you, I look at this number 44.5, and it screams over to me. It does. Sauce Gardner having an issue this week practicing with an injury. That'll devastate that secondary. And quite frankly, Sauce Gardner holds everybody anyway. But that guy leaving that lineup here, Breece Hall on the opposite side, banged up a bit. Alan Lazard's coming back, people, I believe. I think he was activated this week for his practice window. And could he play? Is that Aaron Rodgers' best friend? That's all they were missing here on offense? I do look at that total and want to get after it. Because I think Miami, put it this way, 6.5 down to 5.5 as FanDuel opened that line. No way, shape, or form I'm ever going to back the Jets as a favorite. But I start to see some of that numbers and say, could they at least hang in? And I understand the Jets are money burners out here. But I do think that game has a chance to have some juice, no doubt about it. And Chris Warren says, June 8, 1988. Isn't that amazing? A Major League Baseball team did not get lights until 1988. Like, high school football and high school baseball was playing under the lights for decades before Chicago actually got lights. Unique to Major League Baseball here, where the Chicago was playing every game in the day. Kind of interesting stuff, but that's long gone at this point. There are, you know, lights are out there now at Wrigley, mega boards all over the place. I just would have liked to see Wrigley in its original features. Now we get to the 4 o'clock slate. Seattle and Arizona. Key battle, guys, in the NFC West. That line opened up as a slight favorite towards Arizona at home at -1.5, and now sitting at -2.5 with some juice. -115s, -120s are out there. Total, which opened up at 46.5, that now drops to 44.5. I am a big fan of Arizona. We just saw these two teams play in Seattle. It was a defensive game. A pick six really changed that one up. I still would lead with Arizona. I love what Jonathan Gannon has done with that defense. They are playing really good, really physical football. And then have James Conner on the opposite side, Kyler Murray. You're now throwing the football and opening it back up here to Marvin Harrison Jr. And also one of the best tight ends in football, man. If you haven't been paying attention, pick up that offense here and realize what some of those guys are going beast mode over there. Buffalo and Los Angeles. Ooh, this line's good. Three quarters of the tickets coming in here, guys, on Buffalo. That line opened up at 3.5. Has it moved? Screams Rams. Is anybody out there willing to take the Rams against the unstoppable Buffalo Bills? Could be. We got one more segment to go and a couple more games here to recap and look ahead on Sunday with DRS. We're only getting started. We'll be right back with this short break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Yo! Hey, by the way, fun little side topic here. Anybody follow Darren Revelle? I don't follow him, but his tweets pop up on my timeline once in a while. And he puts out a picture available at the SEC Championship game in Atlanta tomorrow. It's a rack of ribs filled with mac and cheese, Ritz cracker crumbs, scallions, and kettle chips in a Mercedes-Benz Stadium bowl for $30. And I look at it and I say to myself, actually seems kind of cheap for a football stadium. But I know Arthur Blank, which I don't think has any, I don't know if Arthur Blank's setting the prices there, but I know he does have a value menu per se, which a lot of NFL teams don't have. But the reason I ask it is, it says it's available in a sweet tea barbecue sauce for Georgia or a Chipotle barbecue sauce for Texas. So it's an interesting concept here. And it's probably tiny when you actually get it, but it looks intriguing. But we always see some of these crazy food arrangements, if you will, at some of these NFL stadiums and college football stadiums. Now, my question, though, is has anybody ever tried any of this stuff? Like, I know Arizona had like a, I don't know, a 3-foot hot dog that was like, I don't know, $40-$50, whatever it was, maybe even more than that. Has anybody ever done that before? Tried that crazy food item at the ballpark as opposed to, hey, let me just get a, at a baseball game, ice cream in a Philadelphia Phillies cup or a Cubs cup or a Mariners cup. You know what I mean? I've never tried that because to be mass-produced food scares me sometimes when it starts to get a little bit extra, as we like to say. So I don't know if the best environment for me is let me get the ribs and the mac and cheese and the Ritz crackers that when was this cooked? How many of these were cooked together? How long has that thing been sitting around before I bought it? You feel me on that? It's one thing to get a hot dog. It's like, hey, I just watched them grill that up on the, you know, it's only been there a couple of minutes. I'll eat it. But I get a little bit nervous. Like, where'd that mac and cheese come from? Did they just heat it up a couple minutes ago, but it's been sitting around for days and days and days? But it's not a bad price for $30, though, to get some ribs and mac and cheese at a game where if that was probably in Philadelphia or Yankee Stadium or Boston at Fenway, it's probably $150. But just wanted to check in on that. Last couple games on the card, we talked about Buffalo and Los Angeles. The Rams only getting 24% of the tickets in that game, still hanging at 3.5. If I look at that line, that is a Rams line. It is. Same way I look at that Texas line tomorrow going up against Georgia. Seems like a Texas line. Just screams out to me. Not a lot of action here on the Rams with that line not moving. Does that say your boy DRS is actually getting after that? No, it doesn't. But that prop game should be pretty special. We don't have to worry about snowy conditions with Josh Allen. Does he fling it around in this game? Does Keon Coleman come back? I saw him practicing the other day. Also, from a Rams perspective, Puka Nacua, unstoppable. Does Cooper Kupp step up in this game? Should be a fun one. Chicago and San Francisco, I don't have a lot of juice in this one. Interesting, though, that San Francisco opened up as that look-ahead number at 5.5. That's now dropped to 3.5 at some outlets. Also settling in at 4 at BetMGM and also Bet365. Total in that game listed at 44.5. But what are we getting out of the San Francisco 49ers? Basically putting everybody on IR at this point. Chicago's got a decent defense. Do we push the football in that one? And Chicago also technically on that mini bye since they played last Thursday, which was Thanksgiving. And how do they resent? Do you get that new coach bump? Thomas Brown takes over as the new head coach. You know they'll be aggressive. Let's see what we get out of Caleb in that game. I'm very intrigued, though, guys. Chargers, Kansas City, Sunday night. I know the MO to many of us when we look at the Kansas City Chiefs is if that line is over 3, it's an absolute no-brainer, no buy. You just take the other side because Kansas City will probably win on some late field goal or shenanigans like they always do. I think this game is a little bit different. The reason I say that is love the Chargers win against Atlanta. Don't get me wrong. They didn't do anything in that game. Returned million interceptions, one for a touchdown. Barely did anything on offense. J.K. Dobbins isn't there. Ladd McConkey, I don't think he's going to play in this game, that knee injury, or will severely restrict him there. I didn't see the final reports, which we'll get today, for those practices. But for my money, I think Kansas City covers. FanDuel's got a 3.5 out there. Am I wrong out here? Or do you just say, Donnie, you got come on now. You know the MO of the Kansas City Chiefs. But I just look at the damaged goods on offense for the Chargers. I don't think they can, I don't want to say move the football. That's unfair because Harbaugh's going to have a good game plan together. They still have a good quarterback and a solid offensive line. But I did see the team total earlier in the week sitting at 19.5. I don't think the Chargers get to 20 points. And if they don't get to 20, that probably means Kansas City's in the lower 20s, 24-20, 24-19, 24-17 range. I think that's where it ends up. So in a game that very rarely would I say Kansas City should be the right side, we always think Kansas City wins because that's what they do. But that line is cheap, and I understand the Chargers getting 70% of the tickets here, but I do think that could actually be a touchdown victory for the Kansas City Chiefs. Say it ain't so, baby. That'll do it for today's Friday football show right here on Moneyline. Solo mission completed here for your boy DRS. Make sure you tune in Sunday. We'll be on the desk on Pro Football Today. For Chris Brown, the Wheels of Steel, and your boy DRS, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you on Monday, another edition of Moneyline.